From the Moon Broadcast Center at KPCC, this is The Frame. I'm John Horn, and thanks for joining us during our spring membership drive. Today, my guest is novelist and comic book creator Neil Gaiman. He's no stranger to writing for television, from episodes of Babylon 5 and Doctor Who to bringing his own book, American Gods, to the Starz Network. But for the Amazon miniseries Good Omens, Gaiman had the added task of honoring the memory of his late collaborator, Terry Pratchett. Before Pratchett's death in 2015, they'd wanted to bring the story to the screen, but it didn't come together. Gaiman told me what it's like to finally bring Good Omens to television all these years later without Pratchett.
I mean, it's been a burden in the best sense, rather like, you know, Pilgrim's Progress. You carry your burden. And at the point where Terry gave me the job of, please make Good Omens into television so that I can watch it before I die, and then he died. And now I had this huge thing to carry of, can I make this enormous TV series that Terry would have liked?
When you think about the themes that the book and the series are focused on, it seems like fallibility or infallibility is such a central conceit, and that even if you are a figure that lives beyond the realm of human existence, that you suffer from the same problems and misgivings and decisions that any mortals suffer from. And it feels like that idea particularly is something that is anchored in a lot of your work.
I was going to say, that's in everything. That's in Sandman, point to anything that I've done, American Gods. Just because you're a god doesn't mean that you're right. Just because you're fancy doesn't mean, you know, it probably means you're going to screw up on a larger scale.
I've been worrying too. What if I did the right thing with the whole eat the apple business? Demon can get into a lot of trouble for doing the right thing.
Be funny if we both got it wrong, eh? If I did the good thing and you did the bad one.
No, wouldn't be funny at all.
And angels don't really know what's going on, just as the demons don't really know what's going on. The only person who knew what was going on in Good Omens was Agnes Nutter, and she got blown up.
When you were trying to figure out the tone of the series, from the very first episode and the very first few minutes of it, what was the challenge and how did you try to figure out what the opening moments of that episode would be, and how hard was it to settle on the right way to start?
When I wrote the original script for Good Omens, I just began it in the Garden of Eden. And it worked well, but when we put together a rough cut of the first episode, it didn't quite work. It felt like there was something missing. And also, when we got to the little speech about the creation of the universe and when people believed it to be, it was kind of like, well, actually, we've already seen the Garden of Eden, so that doesn't really work. And then I thought, well, hang on, if we put that speech first, it does a number of things, including that little scene is my only real sort of hat tip to Douglas Adams.
Archbishop James Usher claimed that the heaven and the earth were created on Sunday, the 21st of October, 4004 BC at 9 a.m. This, too, was incorrect. By almost a quarter of an hour. It was created at 9:13 in the morning, which was correct. The whole business with the fossilized dinosaur skeletons was a joke the paleontologists haven't seen yet.
I wrote the beginning of Good Omens, the first 5,000 words, because I'd just written a book called Don't Panic, The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy Companion. I got to work as a 26-year-old with Douglas of blessed memory. And having written that whole book, I went, well, I can do this. This is English humor style. I can write it. And I wrote the opening of the first 5,000 words of Good Omens and sent them off to some friends. And one of those friends was Terry, who about 8 months later phoned me up and said, here, let's do that thing. So the idea of putting a little tribute to Douglas right at the very beginning appealed to me.
To understand the true significance of what that means, we need to begin earlier, a little more than 6,000 years earlier, to be precise, just after the beginning. It starts, as it will end, with a garden. In this case, the Garden of Eden. And with an apple.
But what was weird and wonderful about that, as with so much of making Good Omens, is I didn't know if it was going to work or not until the final version of the graphics that kicked the thing off came in, and I was able to go, okay, the whole thing works. You know, I had somebody whose first question to me was, Black Adam and Eve, isn't that contentious? And I was like, well, you're talking about a show in which an 11-year-old Antichrist is a nice kid could save the world or destroy it, and an angel and a demon have to team up to save the world. Honestly, a Black Adam and Eve, it's the least of your problems.
We're talking with Neil Gaiman about Good Omens. I want to ask you about your collaboration with Terry Pratchett and what you remember from that experience and the way that you work together that you're able to borrow from and replicate in the making of the series. What about that collaboration as writers are you able to preserve and use to your advantage when you're adapting it?
Well, partly the fact that I know the book inside out, upside down. You know, Terry and I wrote and rewrote each other's stuff. We put it all together. We did a grand rewrite on it. We kept fiddling with it. It's sort of all there in my head. Plus, all of the conversations that Terry and I had about sequels, about expanding the world, that's where our angels come from, or the demons. They don't feel tacked on in any way. They feel like they're an integral part of Good Omens. They aren't in the book.
Right. They were part of a planned sequel, right?
Exactly. But that meant that they were there for me to go, okay, well, if we were going to get to that point in the sequel, if we were doing it again, knowing what we know now, we would have put them in up front anyway. So let me just go and put them in. That kind of thing was very easy. And it was such a collaboration. What I missed most about the collaboration was just the fact that when I got stuck, I would hand over to Terry. I'd just go, I'm stuck. I've created this character called Newt. I've created Shadwell. I've brought them on. I'm not really sure what happens next. I'll send it to Terry, and Terry carries the scene on. And there would be places when I was writing it. I remember the frustration of not being able to call Terry. But I also remember the thing that was the biggest delight in Good Omens was figuring something out, solving a problem, calling Terry and going, okay, I've got it. Listen to this. But I couldn't do that.
When we come back, more with Neil Gaiman on adapting his novel Good Omens without his longtime friend and collaborator, Terry Pratchett. Welcome back to The Frame. I'm John Horn. Included in author Neil Gaiman's vast body of work is Good Omens, written with Terry Pratchett. Before Pratchett died in 2015, he asked Gaiman to adapt the humorous fantasy novel into a TV series, and now he has. It's an Amazon production starring Michael Sheen and David Tennant. Let's pick up my conversation with Neil Gaiman about making the series without Pratchett by his side.
We couldn't think of a title for the book. And I phoned up Terry, and I said, what about Good Omens? And he said, I like that. He said, what about The Nice and Accurate Prophecies of Agnes Nutter Witch? I said, I like that. Why don't we make it Good Omens, and then we subtitle it The Nice and Accurate. And it's like, yes. Everything up to and including the title was us. And suddenly, it was me. But what that meant, which was kind of wonderful, was whenever there were the kind of clashes that you have with a production over what's going to happen, you know, I'm showrunner, the normally very affable and agreeable Neil Gaiman, when, you know, producers come to you and say, okay, we think the best way to do this would actually be to cut what you've written and to do it with woodcuts, referring to the Agnes Nutter scene, I sort of, you know, mentally checked in with the Terry Pratchett sitting on my shoulder. And I went, well, hang on, that was Terry's scene. He wrote that. He was incredibly proud of that. When I wrote that scene in episode 2, I wrote it for Terry.
Perhaps invisible demons pursue the witches she runs.
No, she said it's good for you. She said we should get more fiber in our diet.
I wrote it because I wanted to bring it to life for Terry. So, no.
She is obviously mad. But how can we be certain she is a witch?
We're not doing it with woodcuts. We're going to find the money and we're going to make it work. And if we have to shift stuff around or whatever, but we will do it and we'll pull it off. And we did.
Terry obviously left almost as part of his last will and testament this request, command, order, suggestion that this be done, that it not go unmade. So when you think about what would give him satisfaction, is it that it was done, or is it that it was done in a certain way, or both of those things?
I think for me, it was the fact that it was just made as a labor of love. And you can taste that it was made by people as a passion project. It's quirky, it's odd, it's not like anything else. Michael Sheen wound up sort of along for the ride and absolutely determined to get it made. David Tennant got wrapped up in it. John Hamm had loved Good Omens since he was at school and he read it, and he was determined to be part of this. People like Michael McKean or Nick Offerman, Nina Shasanya, who plays Sister Mary Loquacious, who is amazing and who has read Good Omens once a year since she was 15 because it's her favorite book. And then we got Douglas McKinnon, who loved the book and who would occasionally get grumpy with me for having left out a line that he had liked from the book. And he'd say, can you put that back in? And I'd be like, yeah, of course. What's lovely is he was determined that this be, as I was, Good Omens, the television version. It's different. And you're going to get a whole different thing out of it. And the relationship between Crowley and Aziraphale is expanded and played with. Episode 3 contains what I believe, at something like 29 minutes, maybe the longest pre-title sequence in human history.
Right, the credits almost come at the end credits.
I love the fact that by the time the credits show up, everybody's like, what? What? Oh, what just happened? Oh. And then they realize, no, that was the pre-title sequence. It just lasted 29 minutes and it covered 6,000 years.
We're talking with Neil Gaiman about Good Omens. When people read a book, especially a book that they love or read repeatedly, they imagine in their own mind what that person looks like, what that person sounds like. And you have actors, David Tennant, Michael Sheen, John Hamm, Nick Offerman, Frances McDormand, people who have read the book and love the book and probably have in their own mind imagined what the characters they're playing look and sound like. So how do you work with an actor who has that idea and not divorce him or her from what they have taken out of the book, but still give you what you need in the show that might be compatible with what they want to do?
You know what's wonderful, and I think this says something about the class of actors that we had, was that it was kind of what they brought that actually showed us what it was, and particularly Nina Shasanya.
This is Sister Mary Loquacious.
Sister Mary Loquacious. The nuns were right at the beginning of the shoot. We were trying to cast that part. We were trying to cast a lot of things. And nothing was sitting right with me in the casting. Everything was off. And I hadn't figured out the vocabulary to explain to the casting director at that point why everything that I was seeing that was coming in from them was off. And then we got Nina's tape as Sister Mary, and it was perfect.
Fancy me holding the Antichrist, counting his little toesy-wosies. Does he look like your daddy? I bet he does. Do you look like your daddy where the kids?
He doesn't. Take him up to room 3.
Room 3? Do you think he'll remember me when he grows up?
And it was pitch perfect. And it came from somebody whose favorite book was Good Omens, who had read it once a year since she was 15, who knew it entirely. And I realized watching her that what she was doing was acting completely straight, knowing that the words and the dialogue were there and they would take care of her and they would make it funny, but what she was just giving was a really cracking, spot-on emotional performance. And I realized the thing that had been driving me nuts and I hadn't been able to articulate before that was that we were getting funny acting from people who knew it was a comedy. And they read the script, and it's full of funny lines, so they were doing funny acting, which means that we cannot do that. We cannot cast for that. We cannot allow for that. Everything in this has to be rooted in emotional truth, in playing it straight. So that was how we did it. And we were lucky in having, you know, the premier Welsh actor of his generation and the premier Scottish actor of his generation as our two leads. And they give us a performance that is absolutely outstanding that then everybody else gets to build upon as well.
And let's just say if you are in the maternity ward and someone named Sister Mary Loquacious says she's going to fetch your baby from the nursery, make sure you have the right baby.
Absolutely. Always double check your baby.
Neil Gaiman, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Oh, that was so great. Thank you.
Good Omens is a 6-part miniseries, and it's streaming now on Amazon Prime. And that's it for The Frame today. Thanks for listening, both on the radio and on demand. And thank you so much for supporting KPCC. I'm John Horn. We'll see you back here tomorrow.